Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kedushin Daf Samach. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find on the third wide line, or if you prefer, 13 lines from the bottom. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, in this case a general topic heading. We call the Nosei Klali, Kiddushin Al Tanai, a marriage offered to a woman on condition, with a stipulation. The Mishnah, Ho'imer Li'isha, Hareat Mukadeshes Li, a man offers a pruta to a woman, and says, you will be married unto me, Almanas she'etein loch mosayim zuz, on condition that I give you 200 zuz. Hare zu mekudeshes. Vehu yitain. That's considered a marriage, provided he gives the 200 zuz. 200 zuz being a form of currency, $200, if you will. Number two. Almanas she'etein loch mikan viad shloshim yoyim. If he says, be married to me on condition that I give you the money from now up till 30 days. If he gives her the money within 30 days, the marriage takes hold. And if not, eino mekudeshes. So she's not married. Almanas shiyeshli mosayim zuz. If he proposes marriage on condition that I have 200 zuz, hare zu mekudeshes viyeshlo. It's a marriage, provided he has the 200 zuz. If he says to her, Almanas she'erech mosayim zuz, be married on condition that I show you 200 zuz, harezu mekadeshes, viare lo, she'll be married, provided he shows her 200 zuz. Ve'im hera al hashulchan, if the man happened to be a money changer, and he showed her 200 zuz that was on the shulchan, on the table where the money exchanger works, and the monies were not his. They were part of the business for changing money, but they weren't his personal funds. It's true. He said, on condition that I show you 200 zuz. So, technically speaking, he's showing her 200 zuz. But the Mishnah says, Eino Mekudeshes, she's not going to be married, because the understanding of the woman is that he would show him 200 zuz that belong to him, not just 200 zuz in coins. As we go on in the Gemara, we first take a look at the side where we have in the margin a Nosei topic heading, which reads, Machloikis Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda be'inyin kiddushin v'gitin, a disagreement between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, both regarding the realm of marriage and divorce. A man says, Almanas loseis mosayim zuz, whether it be the marriage or divorce, conditional on the giving of 200 zuz. Mosai befoyel chalim. When in actuality does the marriage or the divorce take effect? Rav Huna says yochulu lemafreya, that when the money is paid, the event, whether it's the marriage or divorce, will kick in, will take hold retroactively from the beginning point. Rav Yehuda says no, only from the point that the monies are actually paid. The markings that you see in the Gemara include a long marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice it says Gabi Kiddushin, and then you'll see it says Gabi Gittin. In other words, the Machlokes Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, as we indicated in our nosei, our topic heading, their disagreement appears in the topic of Kiddushin, marriage, and the topic of Gittin, divorce. And what you will notice is that the marking, the length indicator, continues till the third line from the top, at which time another long marking kicks in, where we say Tzricha. Tzricha means it's necessary to feature their disagreement in both topics, and not relying on just teaching their disagreement in one and leaving me to figure out their respective opinions in the other. Now the Gemara. Itmar. Regarding the case of a man says, Al menas she'etein loch mosayim zuz, harei zu mekudeshes, a man who offered a woman a pruta and said, take this pruta on condition that I give you 200 zuz, we say that the marriage is effective. So Rav Huna says, Itmar Rav Huna Omar, v'hu yitein, provided he gives the money. Rav Yehuda Omar Lichas Yitein, the marriage will take hold when he gives the money. Rav Huna Omar Vahu Yitein, Rav Huna says that the marriage takes hold and he is to give the money. What is the difference between saying and he is to give the money versus when he gives the money? So Rav Huna says, Vahu Yitein Tano Havi, it's a condition that was built into the initial marriage, Mekayim Tano Vazio. The condition is to be fulfilled, and the marriage takes hold. And we indicated before, it takes hold retroactively from the time that the initial marriage was proposed. And Rav Yehuda Omar, he says, L'chishayiteng, the marriage will take hold when he gives the money. L'chiyoiv, when he gives it, have a kiddushi. Hashtamiya lo have a kiddushi. Right now, until he is paid, there is no marriage. My binayu, what practical difference is there between Rav Huna's approach and Rav Yehuda's approach? Iko binayu, there is a difference. In the following case, Sheposhtu yoda v'kiblo kiddushin me'acher. The woman, if she accepted marriage from someone else, in other words, before the first fellow actually paid the money, someone else, some Mr. Two, we'll call him, offers her marriage without any conditions. Immediate, he offers her unconditional marriage on the spot. After Mr. One had proposed his marriage with the expectation of his paying the money at some point. So if she, in the interim, before she received the money from Mr. One, she accepted marriage from Mr. Two, L'Rav Huna lo havu kiddushi. According to Rav Huna, the second fellow's offer is not going to take hold. In other words, when Mr. One eventually pays the money, Rav Huna told us that retroactively from the very beginning point in time, she was married to Mr. One. There's no room for Mr. Two's marriage to take hold. The Rav Yehuda havu kiddushi. According to Rav Yehuda, the marriage with Mr. One would have taken place only when Mr. One paid the money. In actuality, in practice, no retroactive taking hold of marriage. Therefore, the marriage with Mr. Two, which was offered to her before Mr. One paid the money, Mr. Two's marriage would take hold. Utna nami gabi gitin ki hai gavno. And we have a similar teaching in the realm of divorce. Ha'omer li'isha, harei ze gitech, amanas shetitli li mosayim zuz. A man says to a woman, this is your divorce, on condition that you, the lady, pay me, the man, the husband, 200 zuz. Harei zu mugureshes, v'hititain. It's an effective divorce, and she is to pay the money. Itmar, Rav Huna Omar, v'hititain. And the divorce is a good divorce, and she is expected to pay the money, if of course she wants it to be a good divorce. And Rav Yehuda Omar, lichashititain, the divorce will take hold only when she pays the money, but not prior to that, not retroactively. Rav Huna Omar, vehi titain, the expectation of her to pay the money, tanohavi, is a condition. Mekayma tano, when the condition is filled, the aslo, the marriage will then be, that is, the divorce will then take effect retroactively. Rav Yehuda Omar, Licha Shetitain, Licha Yehiva Le, Hu, the Haviget, according to Rav Yehuda, only when she actually pays the money will the get be an effective get. Hashtamiya, lo havi kedu get. In the meantime, the get is non-existent. She is not divorced. And just to repeat, according to Rav Yehuda, she will be considered divorced only at the point that she pays the money. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. My binayu, what is the difference between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda? We should take a look at Rashi at the top line in the Rashi. My binayu, al korchach, you have to, we're forced to say, le Rav Huna nami, Asura linose ad shetitain. This woman, even though Rav Huna has the concept of retroactively being considered divorced, but until the money is paid, until she pays the money, she cannot marry someone else. Shema lo yiskai matanai. Veget batel b'nei mamzerim. Maybe she will not pay the money. And if she doesn't pay the money, she was never divorced from Mr. 1. And if she marries Mr. 2 and has children, those children are mamzerim. They're illegitimate. So it's clear that not only according to Rav Yehuda, she is not to marry someone prior to her paying the money, which is obvious because according to Rav Yehuda, she's not divorced at all. But even according to Rav Huna, who has the concept of retroactive divorce, nevertheless, until the money is paid, Rav Huna will agree with Rav Yehuda that she shall not marry in the interim. So what's the point of difference? Ika binayu, a difference between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda would be in the following: Shiniskara haget o she'ovad. If prior to the paying of the money, the get got torn up or lost, the Rav Huna have a get. According to Rav Huna, even though at the point the money is paid by her, the get is no longer around, but it was around initially. And since the get takes hold retroactively, there's no problem. According to Rav Yehuda, there's no divorce whatsoever until she actually pays the money. Prior to that, there's no divorce, so it's essential that the get remains extant until the time of payment, according to Rav Yehuda. And likewise, with regard to Ovad, if it got lost, it would not be acceptable, according to Rav Yehuda, if at the time she pays the money, the get is lost. Utsricha. And now we have the long marking, as we indicated before. Why it's necessary to teach the machlokis Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda in both cases of marriage and divorce. Why is it not sufficient to just teach one case where they argue, and I'll figure out what they hold in the other case? The Gemara explains, and you notice we have a squiggle underline highlighting the introduction of each point. The e ashmeinen gabi kiddushin. Had we taught their machlokas by marriage, behalkom Rav Huna, here Rav Huna would say that there is a retroactive marriage from the initial point of the man giving her the pruta. Mishum de lekruva kasi. It's an attempt on his part to draw her near to him. So the earlier, the better, so to speak. So if we can describe it as being effective retroactively, great. Avol gerushin derachka kasi, but getter gerushin, divorce, where the goal is to distance her, to send her away. Emo moidi le Rav Yehuda. Maybe Rav Huna would have adopted Rav Yehuda's position that it's not considered a divorce until she actually pays the money. V'yitmar b'hach, and had we taught just the case of gerushin, b'hach koma Rav Huna, maybe here Rav Huna says that it takes place immediately, that the gerushin, the divorce, is effective retroactively. Mishum de'ihu lo kosif le limitba. In the case of divorce, the man said, I'll give you the divorce on condition that you pay me the 200 zuz. We have full confidence that it will come to be, because he's low kosif, means he's not embarrassed to demand the money from her. After all, he's divorcing her. He's not trying to stay on good terms some type of benevolent relationship. Therefore, he won't be embarrassed to demand the payment. So we can take our chances, so to speak, says Rav Huna, to say that the divorce will be effective retroactively. Avol hocha, in the case of a marriage where the man offered marriage to the woman on condition that he, the man, pays her 200 zuz, who has to seek the payment? She has to ask him for the money. And it's, you're dealing with a couple that's now bonding, that's getting together. She would be embarrassed to demand the money. So maybe she won't get the money. Only if she seeks it out. Only if she takes the initiative to get it and she's embarrassed to do so. Ema modi lei l'Rav Yehuda. There was room to think that Rav Huna would agree with Rav Yehuda in the case of marriage, that the marriage doesn't take place until she actually gets the money, because until then, she doesn't have sufficient motivation to seek out payment because of her possible embarrassment. Therefore, tzricha, it's necessary to teach the machlokas Rav Huna, not only in kiddushin but in gerushin as well, that in both cases Rav Huna will tell you that when the money is paid, the event takes effect retroactively. Meisvei, you notice we have a long question marking, and if you skip to the end of the long question, the Gemara tells you it seems that we have a Tufta de Rav Yehuda. We have a Tanaic source against the Amora Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda will have an answer, which we'll see afterwards. The Gemara. Meisvei. Hareze giteich amanas shetitni limosayim zuz. Man divorces woman on condition that she pays him 200 zuz. Afobishniskara haged oishovad. Even if before the actual payment of the money, the get got torn up or lost, harezu migureshes, she is considered divorced. It's a kosher divorce. Right away, we see a problem for Rav Yehuda. The Gemara pointed out on the top line that if the get is torn up or lost, according to Rav Yehuda, it would not be a good get, and here you see it is. The source adds, li'achir lo tinosei ad shetitein, but as far as allowing her to marry someone else, we say, don't marry someone else until she actually pays the money. This, of course, was a point that we mentioned earlier. The ode Tanya, and furthermore, we have a source that says, Omar lo, harei ze gitecha manash shetitni li mosayim zuz, Umes, this is your get on condition that you, the woman, pay me, the husband, 200 zuz, and the husband died. Nosna ein zikukuliyavam. If she paid the money, so then she's divorced, and she's not connected, she's not bound to the Yibum marriage, to his surviving brother, in the event that the first husband left no children. Lo nosna. If she did not pay the 200 zuz, which was the stipulation for the get to be a good get, sukukul yavam, she's not considered divorced, and she's bound to the yavam. Rav Shmuel Omer, noisenes liochiv oy loviv oliechod min akruvim. Rav Shmuel says she has the option of paying the money to the husband's father, or to one of his other relatives. Ad kan lo pligi, there, up to this point, there's a machlokus between the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel, elo demor sovar li velo li yorshai. According to the Tanakama, when the husband said, on condition that you give me, he meant me and not any of my heirs. So that in order to fulfill the condition, it would have to be given to him alone, to the husband alone. And Umor Sofar and Rav Shmuel holds, Afilu Yorshai. When he said, on condition that you give me the 200 zuz, it wasn't to the exclusion of his heirs. The kuli al momia, there is, however, unanimity. Everyone agrees to know ahave that the statement of amanat shetitni li mosayim zuz was a statement of condition, a stipulation. And that's Tiufta de Rav Yehuda. That would be a seeming refutation of Rav Yehuda. According to Rav Yehuda, Almanash Titni Li wasn't a mere condition that when fulfilled things would be effective retroactively, but rather you have to, only when the money is paid, then the event takes hold. And as far as the Gemara is concerned, this Tanaic source, though it has a machlokas in it, they both agree that the nature of the statement of Amanas, She Titni Li Mosayim Zuz, is a mere stipulation. And that's not the approach taken by Rav Yehuda. Omar Loch Rav Yehuda, Ha Mani Rebihi. Rav Yehuda says that this Tanaic source from which you're asking on me is in accordance with the opinion of Rebbe. Yomar Ravuna, Omar Rebbe, Kol Oimer Almanas, Kilmer Me'achshav Domi, Upligi Rabbanon Ole, Vano Diamri Ki Rabbanon. This source that you posed as a question on me is one Tanaic opinion. There are others that I can rely upon. This source says that when you say Almanas, it's as if you're saying that I want it to be chal, to take hold right now, Me'achshav, from right now. That's Rebbe's opinion. And therefore, so when the money is paid, we can say it takes place, it really took place retroactively from immediately, from right now. However, Upligi Rabbonin Ole, Vano de Amrika Rabbonin. The Rabbonin disagree that when one says Almanas, it doesn't mean as if they're saying that I want it to be Chal from right now. And I hold like the Rabbonin. So according to the Rabbonin, like I say, the divorce or the marriage won't take place until the money is actually paid. Before continuing in the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading. Kol ha'oimer almanas. As we've seen earlier, anyone who says such and such will be on condition that, ka'imer me'achshav domi, it's tantamount to saying I want the action to take hold from right now. Ha'imer mehayoyim ula'achar misa, someone who says I want the thing, the action to take place from today and after one's death. So one approach is tanai. That's a stated condition. The other approach, chazora. It's actually a recanting. In other words, they say, mehayom, I want it from today. And they say, no. Achar misa, after death. In the case of a get, so we know that a get, leachar misa, a get declared to be effective only after one's death is not a divorce. A person who is dead, a dead man, does not divorce. The Gemara. Gufa, Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rebbe. Kol ha'oimer almanas, ka'oimer me'achshav domi. Anyone who says that an action shall take place on condition that, it's as if they're saying, I want the action to be from right now. We have a long marking introducing Rebbe Zera. Omar Rebbe Zera, Ki Havinon beBavel, when we were in Bavel, Rebbe Zera was one of the Talmudic figures that started his career in Bavel and eventually came up to Eretz Yisrael. He resettled in the land of Israel. So Rebbe Zera says, Ki Havinon beBavel, when we were in Bavel, Havi Amrinon, we used to say the following. Just take note of the fact that this quotation marks you see continues quite a few lines. All of this is what Rabbi Zera quotes as his colleagues as having said. Namely, Hal Diomar of Hunomar Rebbe, Kala Oimer Almanas, Kaimer Me'achshav Domi, that he who says a condition, on condition that, It's as if he's saying from right now, Pligi Rabbonin Ole. It was thought that the rabbis, the other Rabbonim, disagree with that. Kisalki Lahasam, when I came to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechei LeRabbi Asi, I met Rabbi Asi, the Yosef Vekomer that was seated, and said, Vekomer Lo Mishmei to Rabbi Yochanan, and said, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, HaKol Moedim, Ba'oimer Al Menas, Ka'oimer Me'achshav Domi. That actually everyone is in agreement with a statement of that nature. Almanas is as if he's saying, I wanted to take hold right now. Lo nechliku ela. The disagreement arose concerning the following. Mehayoyim ulachar misa. How to view the statement of, I want something to take hold from today and after death. Veha Tanya, and support to that point is this in the following Tanaic source, Mehayom Lachar Misa, Get Vieno Get Divrei Chachomim, Rabbi Oimer Koze Get. So you see in this source, the Chachomim and Rabbi disagree on how to view the Mehayom Lachar Misa, whereas the Chachomim are in doubt. Is it a statement of condition, or is it a reversal? And if it's a reversal, so the man is really saying, no, I don't want the get to be chal, to take hold from today, but rather after my death. And Rebbe is on, from his standpoint, is on clear footing, that Mehayom Ulachar Misa is a mere condition, and that the get really is chal from right now. And it's as if he's saying, I want this get to be a get from now if I die from this particular ailment. The Gemara continues with a reference to that which was mentioned earlier. In order to direct your attention, we have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align with the arrow above. And we continue in the Gemara, Ulu Rav Yehuda, Diomar, Bial Menas Nami Pligi. According to Rav Yehuda, that holds that even with regard to Al Menas, there is a Machlokes, that only Rebbe holds that Al Menas is like right now, but the Chachomim don't agree. Ademiflegi b'mahayom lachar misa, instead of their arguing around the term of mayom lachar misa, niflegi b'almanas, why not state in this brisa that we just read their machlokis concerning almanas? The Gemara answers, lehodiach hakoyach de Rebbe, to show us how far Rebbe goes, that even de mayom lachar misa nami hareze get, that even in a condition stated in this fashion, Me'am Lachar Misa, where the term Lachar Misa is heard explicitly, and yet Rebbe is willing to say that that's a straightforward condition and it's hence a real get, to show us how far Rebbe goes in allowing the divorce to go through. In other words, this idea of Lahodiacha Koyach, to show us how far someone goes, is the reason that the source features to teach the example that it teaches. So we'll call it the attempt to feature an extreme opinion. The Gemara says, well, if that's what you're into, v'niflegim be'almanas, why not state the disagreement between Rebbe and the Chachamim surrounding the expression of almanas? Lo'diacha koyach derabonan, according to the Amora, Rav Yehuda, that says that the Tanoim argue concerning Al-Menas as well, why not state there the Tanaic disagreement concerning the case of Al-Menas, to show us how far the Rabbonon go, once again, according to the Amora Rav Yehuda, in the non-acceptance of the statement as a mere condition, or as a condition. And and holding that al-manas does not indicate that the action should take place immediately. So here also you'd have an opportunity to teach an opinion of we'll call it of an extreme nature, to show us how far the Rabbanan go in declaring it ineffective from right now. The Gemara answers, Koyach the hetera odif. If given a chance to show how far an opinion goes in allowing something, heter, we would prefer that. Odif means that we prefer that over showing how far someone goes in prohibiting. So we chose the example of Me'om Lachamisa to show how far Rebbe goes in allowing the get to be considered a kosher get, being that Me'om Lachamisa, according to Rebbe, is a mere statement of condition, as opposed to a doubt, or so, which would include the possibility of reversal. Almanas she'etein loch mikan, and it went on to say in the Mishnah, vi'ad shloishim yoim, nosan lo b'soich shloishim mekudeshes, if the payment is made, the man pays the woman within 30 days she's married, v'im lav, and if not, eino mekudeshes, if he doesn't pay her within the stated time, so she will not be married. The Gemara says, pshita, is that not obvious, that once you say, be married to me on condition that I pay you within 30 days, and you do not pay within the 30 days, she's not married. Why teach the obvious? The Gemara answers, mahu detema, one might have thought without the Mishnah teaching me, that lav tenohu, it's not a condition. In other words, there's no real insistence on specifically 30 days. But it's open-ended. Be married to me on condition that I give you 200 zuz. Ah, the 30 day was ruse, koma. It's only to hasten him. Komash malon, so by the Mishnah teaching that if not within 30 days she's not married, it shows us it's not just lizruzi, just to hasten him in paying the money, but it's literal. It's a binding statement of time. Within 30 days, yes, and outside of 30 days, not married. Almanas shieshli mosayim zuz, hare zu mikudeshes v'yeshlo. There's a point that we would like to look at together in Rashi. You'll notice there's a star that we've placed in Rashi less than halfway down. Rashi there says, V'yesh lo, mashma sheish eidim sheish lo. By the Mishnah saying, when he states, on condition that I have 200 zuz, she'll be married, V'yesh lo implies that there are witnesses that say he has the 200 zuz. Ha lav hachi, implying that without witnesses, Eino mekudeshes, she's not married, umuteres liacher, and she could marry another man if there are no witnesses saying that he has the 200 vamai. Why would we go that far in allowing her to marry someone else in the absence of the two witnesses? Nehu shemo yeshlo, should we not suspect maybe he has the 200 zuz? The Gemara raises two questions. Aleph, the nechush shema yeshlo, even if you don't have the witnesses that the Mishnah implies you need, maybe he still has, even if you don't have the witnesses. Why do we get the feeling from the Mishnah that if you don't have the witnesses, she can marry someone else? V'yoy tanya. And furthermore, we have a Tanaic source that says Chayshinon Shemo Yeshlo. We're Choshesh, we consider that maybe he has. The Gemara answers Lo Kasha. There's no contradiction between the implication of the Mishnah and this Tanaic source. Ha Bekidushe Vadai, Ha Bekidushe Sofek. If you want to establish her as definitely being married, then you'd have to have two witnesses that say that he has the money. However, if you don't have the two witnesses, then we say Yes, he might have, and therefore she might be married to that fellow. But what if someone else were to offer her kedushin? Well, in the case that two witnesses testify that he has the 200 zuz, so the second fellow to offer her kedushin isn't going to take hold. It's nothing. She's completely married to the first fellow. However, if you do not have the two witnesses, we might suspect, and as we're going to suspect, maybe he has the 200 zuz, but on the hand, maybe not. And if someone else offers her marriage, we'll have to consider as him also being married to her, possibly. Under circumstances like that, if she wants to go ahead and marry someone else, she'll need a divorce document. She'll need a get from these two men. If we look in Rashi, Kiddushe Vadai Havu, Im Onu Yoidim Shieshlo, if we know through two witnesses that he has the 200 zuz, so she's married with certainty to the first fellow. V'nafgamina shimbo acher v'kitsho einam gudeshes. Practical point being, if someone else were to offer her money, she would not be married to that someone else. That's, once again, if there are two witnesses that the first fellow has the 200 zuz. V'chilo yad inon, when we don't have that level of certainty, we suspect maybe he has anyway the 200 zuz and she's not allowed to marry someone else of you. However, if that someone else does offer her marriage, so she'll need a divorce document from that second fellow. Maybe the first man and his marriage offer is not a kiddushin, because maybe he doesn't have the 200 zuz. We turn back to the Gemara. Almanas Shereich Mosayim Zuz. The Mishnah went on to tell us that if he shows her 200 zuz on the table, and we explain that if the man speaking was a shulchan, he was a money changer, the Mishnah said she's not married. Tona lo niskavno eloluros mishalo. She had intended only that he would show her his own 200 zuz. Ve'im hera lo al hashulchan eina mekudeshes. The Mishnah mentioned that if he shows her 200 zuz on the table, she's not married. Pshita. Well, the 200 zuz in the case of a money changer that are on the table, we'll assume are not his own 200 zuz. It's 200 zuz that's there for changing money. As far as how he gets paid, how he makes his profit, that's another story. But it's not that 200 zuz on the table. So is it not obvious that she's not married? Lo tzricha, the afagav dinokit domi beiska. We look in Rashi, beiska, lemachsis char. The cash that was on the table is cash from which he will share in the profits as he continues his money-changing efforts. So that the 200 zuz, true, it wasn't his own cash, but through that cash, he was going to share in the profits eventually as the day or as time went on. Even so, she's not considered married, because when he says, on condition that I show you 200 zuz, she was interested in seeing not the potential profits, she was interested in seeing his own actual cash. And that was not the case over here. And hence, the Mishnah said, she's eino mikudeshes. The Mishnah. We continue with cases of marriage on condition. Almanas. Almanas, she actually based kur offer. Hare zu mekudeshes v'yeshlo. Be married unto me on condition that I have a base kur. Base kur is a certain measure. It actually is 30 sa'ah. A sa'ah itself is an area of land that measures 50 by 50 amos. So if he says, be married on, unto me on condition that I have base kurafar, she'll be married v'yesha, provided he in fact owns that. Amanash yesh li b'mokim ploni. On condition, be married unto me on condition that I have a base kur in a particular area. Him yesh lo b'oysa mokim mekudeshes, if he has a base kur, a plot of land in that area, she's married. And if not, she's not married. On condition, he says, you'll be that I show you a base kur of land, she will be married, provided he shows her. If he shows her a base kur of land in a bika, which is a broader land region, but none of the lands are actually his. He just shows her, here's an area of land, and there is a base kur in that area. You know, she's not married. As we indicated in the previous Mishnah, she intended to see a base kur that was his. The Gemara raises the same type of question and answer as we saw before. The Mishnah, when it says V'yeshlo, implies that there need to be witnesses that could testify that he has the base kur. And if not, the Mishnah says she's not married, but V'necho Shemo Yeshlo, should we not suspect that maybe he has anyway, even if he doesn't have witnesses to come forward testifying thusly? V'yod Tanya, and furthermore, the source says Chayshino Shemo Yeshlo, that we in fact suspect maybe he has. So how can the Mishnah say she's not married? The Gemara answers, Lo kashya ha b'kiddushay vaday, ha b'kiddushay safek. If you want to speak in terms of her definitely being married to the man, there would have to be witnesses saying that he has the base kur. In the absence of witnesses, so we say maybe she's married to him. However, if someone else offers her marriage, that second fellow's offer might be the real marriage. We don't know. The Gemara asks, Lomo li lemisna gabi arov, lomo li lemisna gabi zuzi. Why is it necessary to teach this phenomenon, or this situation, in the case of cash, as we saw above? And we have a little star. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara, you can see where we mentioned it earlier. And why, after teaching me by cash, do you teach me the same situation by money, by land? Tzricha. Oh, the Gemara answers, I need to teach both. De'i ashmin and gabi zuzi, had we taught you only the case of cash, namely, that if we don't know for sure, in other words, in the case of cash where we don't have the witnesses telling us, there, I'll tell you, you have to suspect maybe he has. Mishum davidi inshi demitzni, cash is something that people will possess in a private, unknown fashion. Mitzni is literally hide. People hide cash. So that you can have a man saying, I've got 200 zuz, and not have witnesses, and there's no inconsistency with that. People have things that are not known to others. They have cash that's not known to others. Avol aro. When it comes to land, when it comes to real estate, emo, one might have reason, the islay aro kola islay. If he has land, it would be well known. And if there is no koil means literally voice or noise or public awareness, and if there's no public awareness of it, then there's not even an element of doubt. That's what I would have thought. Kol mashmalon, hence we have the discussion concerning land to tell me that even if a man, the man's claim of having land is not accompanied by public awareness, there still is room to suspect maybe he has land. Almenas shiyesh li b'mokim ploni, Im yesh lo v'chule, if he has land in the place that he specified she's married, and if he doesn't have land in that specified area, so she's not going to be married. The Gemara asks, Pshita, is that not obvious? In other words, if he says, on condition that I have land in a specific place, and in that place he doesn't have the land, so the condition wasn't met. So obviously she's not married. Mahu detema, without the Mishnah, there was room to think. Omar law, the man, the husband, could say to her, my nafka loch mino, what difference does it make to you whether the land that I own is in that, is actually in that place or somewhere else? Ano tarachno maisino, if it's what's the concern of a person with regard to land, that the land produces fruits? I'll bring the fruits to you from wherever my land is located, so that even if the land was somewhere else other than the place he specified, she would be married, because he's telling her, he's guaranteeing her, that he'll bring her the produce from the land. Komash Malon, so what our mission is telling us is that she nevertheless can be insistent on the land being located where he said, and that his response to her is not sufficient. Almanas she'erech beis kurafar, Tana, we're taught, lo niskav nezu ela liros mishelo. Her intention is to see a piece of land belonging to him. And his showing her a beis kur is of no relevance, is of no concern to her, unless it's his beis kur. V'mhera b'biko eina mekudeshes, and if he shows her a land region, we say she's not married, being that none of those parcels of land are his. Pshita, well, is that not obvious? Lo tsricha denokat b'distura. The land area in which he shows her the beis kur, though it's not a land registered in his name, it's not a beis kur registered in his name, nevertheless, it is a beis kur that he works on as a sharecropper. So the Mishnah is telling us that is not sufficient as well to establish marriage. So even though he has a connection to the piece of land as a sharecropper, nevertheless, that's not enough. As we continue in the Gemara, we notice a new marking. We have a diamond marking, and we have a Nosei Mivneh introduction. So we'll take a look at what we've written, what we've included in the margin. It says, where you see the diamond featured, Gimel Tchumin. There are three areas of Halacha that will feature, we'll say, the same variable, and we're going to analyze each area and what are they? Number one, Hekdish. Hekdish is the realm of, we'll say, land that you sanctified. Number two, Mecher, sale. Number three, Kiddushei Isha, marriage. Eich Misyachsim L'Nikoyim Usloim Shebesoich Soda. How should we relate to Nikoyim, our ditches, and Sloim, boulders that are in the fields? When it comes to a person stating a certain area, a certain land measure, how do we deal with the presence of ditches and outcroppings, rock outcroppings, boulders that are, as we say, are there outcroppings of rock? As we go on in the Gemara, you're going to notice the use of a double underline. That will be to highlight Mar Ufa Bar Chamo. So now we turn to the Gemara, recognizing the three areas, and they're each one introduced with a diamond, and we also have a numbering. Gabi Hektish Tanan, regarding sanctification of property, we have the following source. Hamaktish Sodeu Bishas Hayoivel. One who sanctifies his field during the historical era when the Yovel, when the rules of Yovel were practiced. The part of the rules of Yovel, the Jubilee year, during that era of time, when one, after having sanctified a field, would want to redeem it, the rate of redemption is based on, we'll say, a Torah-dictated rate, not reflective of actual land value. And the rate is described in the source as noisein. You would have to give to redeem the land, you'd have to give to the temple fund, the temple treasury, bezera chomer sorim, for an area in which you would plant a chomer. Chomer is a an amount of seed that would cover a specific area of land. For us, zera chomer sorim is a measure, a land measure. For that particular land measure, you'd have to pay 50 shekel kesef. So that if you had several, if you had sanctified several zera chomer sorim's worth of area of land, you would redeem per zera chomer sorim, you would pay 50 shekel kesef. Hoyu nikoyim amukim asorot tvochim usloim gvoyim asorot tvochim. If there were ditches 10 tvochim deep, or rock outcroppings 10 tvochim in height. 10 tvochim is a, as we translate that, as 10 hand breadths. It's a measure of height, height or depth. Ein nimdodanimah means they would not be measured as part of the zera chomer sorim. Pachos mikan nimdodanimah. If the height, depth, measure would be less than 10 tefachim, it would be measured along with the land. V'havinon ba, and we ask, Nehi debahadi aro lo kitshu. Granted, if there, we said, if they're 10 tefachim of height or depth, they're not sanctified along with the land. You'd have to find, you'd have to measure zera chomer sorim besides the presence of any ditches or outcroppings of 10 tefachim. So we say that they're not sanctified along with the land. Nikdishu ba'api nafshayu. Let them be considered sanctified in and of themselves. Rashi says on the first narrow line, let me actually start with Rashi, three lines from the top. Nehi debahadi aro lo kachi liyois nimdodim nimdad la lois becheshbon. If you say that they're not measured along with the land, so we would not be measuring the katafris is the incline, the slope down into the ditch or the up the rocks. So that would not be counted along with the measure. Nevertheless, nikdishu b'api nafshay lios nimdodim lefi ma sheyesh bohen. At least count, let us say, the ditch, the area of the bottom of the ditch, or the area at the top of the rocks, as we'll say, separate entities. And yes, that would be included in the measuring. Why do you give us the impression that we just totally discount their presence? V'chitema, the Gemara continues, v'chitema, you might say, well, as long as something doesn't equal a base core, the reference to base core, we should have mentioned earlier, is the zera chomer sorim. So that you might say that as long as there isn't a base core, it has no significance. That's not true. Vera aminu. We challenge that contention. The Brisa says, Sodeh, Ma Tamud Lomar. Why does the Torah use the seemingly extra word, Sodeh? Rashi tells you what the pasuk could have said otherwise. Lefi shenemar zera choymer sorim bechamishim. Since the Torah says that the redemption rate is zera choymer sorim for 50 pieces of silver, ein le'ela sheitish binyan zeh, I would think that the redemption of sanctified properties at that rate is only if he had sanctified initially an area of land that equals a base core, which the Torah calls Zera Chomer Sorim. Minayin the rabbis, how do I know to include even if a person sanctified less? And here we have a list of measures that are in succeeding position, lesser and lesser in size. How do I know to include if someone, let us say, sanctified lesech, a half a core, v'chatzi lesech, or sa'ah, tirka, v'chatzi tirka, filu rova, even a rova amount of land, minayin, that the Torah rate of redemption would still apply. Of course, you would prorate it according to the size of land that was sanctified. Talmud lomar sadeh. Hence, you have that seeming extra word, mikomakom, any amount of land that you sanctify during the Yovel period follows this redemption scale. So the question is, why does the source above say that if there are ditches 10 tefachim deep, so they're not measured along the field for redemption purposes? Omar Mar Ukfa Bar Chama, Hocha Benikoyim Leim Mayim Askinon. The source above that said that they're not counted along with the field for establishing the per core amount of land that he sanctified is because you're dealing with ditches that are filled with water. Mishum Dalav Bnei Zrioninu. They cannot be cultivated. The pasuk mentioned a man had sanctified his field and described it as zera. Zera means seed, something that can be cultivated. You plant seed. Something that's not cultivated is then not to be considered in our calculations. We take a look at the Rashi. The lav b'nei zriya ninu. Kosav Hakosuv, the Torah writes Zera. Umidi Delav B'nei Zrioninu. Ditches filled with water cannot be cultivated. Einon Niftim B'domim Halolu. Ela B'shavya. They're not going to be redeemed at the 50 shekel kesef rate, but rather they would be redeemed according to their market value. The Gemara continues, Daikonami, by careful, by being medayik, by meduyok, being precise and careful in your reading, you can see that this is the case. Dikotoni, it teaches the case of ditches, dumya, the slime kvoyim, alongside the example of outcroppings of rock. Outcroppings of rock are obviously uncultivatable. You cannot cultivate them. Shmamino, so this is proof that the reference to the ditches were in fact ditches filled with water. The Gemara asks, I hachi afilu pochos mikanami, if that be the description, i.e., you cannot cultivate them, then even less than 10 tefachim, they're not b'nei zri'a, they can't be cultivated. Why then are they included in the Torah rate of redemption? The Gemara answers, Hano, ditches and outcroppings measuring less than 10 tefachim in depth and height are considered part of the land. They're Nagani Da'ara Mikru. They're called the Nagani Da'ara. The The word nagani is a word that refers to things like basins or bowls. It's a figure of speech. It's like the basins of the land. But the main point here is the term da'ara is included. It's part of the land, or shidra da'ara mikru, or the spine of the land. Just like the vertebrae in a spine generally protrude forth through the skin. Or you can see the bulging of the vertebrae in a spine, so too the outcroppings of rock are like the bulging forth of the land when they are less than 10 tefachim. Hence, they're botel to the land itself. So we've gone through a discussion concerning sanctified land during the time of Yovel and how we view ditches. Gabi Mecher Tnan. Now in another area of law, sales, we have the following Tanaic source. Ha'imer l'chavero, base kur offer ani moicher lach. A man says to his friend, I'm selling you a base kur of real estate, of land. V'hoyu sham nikoyim amukim asoro tfochim osloyim gvoyim asoro tfochim. And behold, there were ditches 10 tfochim deep, outcroppings of rock 10 tefachim high, ein nimdodin ima. They are not included in what the agreement, they're not included in the measure of the land as per their agreement. Pochos mikan nimdodin ima. Less than 10 tefachim, they are measured as part of the land sale. The omar ma'ukfa barchama afa pi she'ein malei mayim. In the case of sale, the very same Mar Ukva says that the ditches 10 tefachim deep will not be included as part of the sale, even if they're not filled with water. The issue of their cultivatability is a non-issue, meaning you have ditches, no water in them, so you could conceivably plant at the bottom of the ditches things, and yet that's not part of the sale. In other words, the buyer wants to have 10. He wants to have a base core of we'll call it more or less level land without ditches 10 tefachim deep. My time on why is this? Omar of Babel, if he she'ein odom roitze she'itein es ma'osav besod achas v'yireh loy kishnayim u'kishloishim u'kaymos. A person doesn't want to pay money. Yitein es ma'osav, to give forth his money for a purchase of a parcel of land and have it appear as if it's two or three different pieces of land. If you were going to measure, if you were going to include as part of the deal these deep ditches, 10 tefachim deep, so in one's eye, as one surveys the area, it appears that there's a piece of land at the bottom, another piece of land at the surface, and then a third piece of land at the bottom. A person doesn't want to do that. A person wants to pay money for one consistent piece of land. Hence, the ruling of the source, even without water in them, 10 tefachim deep ditches are not included as part of the sale. Hacha mai. Here, with regard to Kidushe Isha. Lehekdish medaminin la ola mecher medaminin la. Are we going to compare the standard of evaluating waterless 10 tefachim deep ditches as we viewed Hekdish and include it in the measure of the base core that he claims he has? Or are we going to compare it to a land sale? And if we compare it to a land sale, so then the man is going to have to have 10 core, he's going to have one core of land exclusive of the waterless ditches. The Gemara answers, Mistabro lehegdish medamina la. Most likely, logically, we would compare it to the case of Hegdish. And when he says, be married to me on condition that I have a base court, the waterless ditches would be included in the measure. The Omar law, the man could say, what difference does it make to you whether we include them or not? I can cultivate these ditches. I can plant in them. And as far as your benefit from it, you're going to benefit from the fruits that the base core produces, including the ditches. And ano tarachno v'zarano umaisino ai, the husband says, will trouble myself, plant those ditches, and bring you the produce. So as far as you are concerned, it should make no difference whether the base court includes the ditches or not. And hence, the halacha will say, according to this svara, that the base core that the woman is going to accept will be a base core that will include, as part of that measure, the ditches, the waterless ditches, even if they happen to measure 10 tefachim in depth. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.